This is Juvie, a podcast that explores cases, legislation, experiences, and ramifications of children and youth in juvenile and adult criminal justice systems. Presented by Zoe Battovinic.
Hello and welcome to Juvie's Juvenile Justice News Roundup. Trends, court rulings, research, hot-button issues, and juvenile cases currently in the media. My name's Zoe Battovinic. Here at Juvie, we invite anyone who has special insight into any of the issues and cases we mention and who'd like to share their perspectives on the show to get in touch with us at juviepodcast@gmail.com. That's juviepodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave comments under the show notes of each episode on our website, juviepodcast.com. And please leave us reviews on iTunes. We'd like to start this edition by thanking two supporters of the podcast who've donated on Patreon and via our website donate button. Thanks to AZ of Maryland and to Dave Mikowski of Michigan. If you're inspired by this, the only podcast in the world devoted to covering juvenile justice news, reform, cases, and exploring cases of possible juvenile wrongful conviction, please consider making either a one-off donation via our website donate button at juviepodcast.com or commit to a small monthly sustaining contribution via our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/juviepodcast. Any amount, small or large, is very much appreciated, and there are rewards for different levels of sustained support. In our last Juvenile Justice News Roundup, that's Juvie Episode 10, we featured the recent policy platform Counselors Not Cops, released by the Dignity in Schools campaign, which advocates for the removal of police from schools in favour of behavioural intervention and restorative justice specialists. You'll find it just after the 6-minute marker in that September 29th episode. Well, here's an example of the kind of incident that campaign is trying to eliminate. Earlier this month, a 14-year-old African-American boy in Prince William County, Virginia, just southwest of Washington, D.C., had a trial date set for November. Ryan Turk is charged with disorderly conduct and petty larceny for reportedly having stolen a 65-cent carton of milk in the lunch queue at Graham Park Middle School back in May of this year. A school resource officer, which is a law enforcement officer assigned to a school on a long-term basis, reported having spotted Ryan cutting in line to take the milk, and when confronted, Ryan became angry and refused to be accompanied to the school principal, insisting that he'd merely gone back to pick up what he'd forgotten to take while in line the first time. Ryan receives free lunches, and the carton of milk was part of his daily allowance. Emmett Robinson, the lawyer representing the family in the case, says that this was an example of institutional racism, despite all those involved, including the officer and the school principal, also being African American. But Robinson says that it is a systemic tendency that operates, regardless of the race of those enforcing the discipline. Studies have in fact shown that black children do indeed tend to receive more frequent and harsher responses to perceived misbehaviours in school, and that such a negative bias towards them begins as early as kindergarten. Ryan had been offered a non-judicial solution via a diversion programme, but he and his mother, Shamise Turk, refused on principle, citing his innocence. There is reportedly video surveillance that clearly demonstrates Ryan in no way tried to conceal his taking of the milk, giving credence to his claim that he thought what he was doing was perfectly legitimate. In Pennsylvania, children are charged as adults in murder cases. In our September 1st edition of Juvenile Justice News Roundup, Juvie Episode 4, we covered the case of now 15-year-old Deris Sanders Jr., who had pled guilty on August 12th to the first-degree murder of 18-year-old Jacob Pushinsky in Erie County in July 2015, when he was 14. When Pushinsky confronted Sanders for trying to steal his bicycle, Sanders shot him. On Friday, October 14th, Deris Sanders Jr. was sentenced to 35 years to life, the guidelines having been a minimum sentence of 25 years. Sanders had been scheduled to go to trial in adult court, but his guilty plea came 3 days beforehand. His defense attorney, Jean Placidi, said in order to spare the victim's family further pain. 15-year-old Deris Sanders Jr. reportedly apologized to the victim's family on Friday as he was sentenced in Erie County Court. The The Juvenile Law Center has just released a report entitled Debtors' Prisons for Kids: The High Cost of Fines and Fees in the Juvenile Justice System, which examines the prevalence all over the United States of fining juveniles for the slightest misdemeanors, as well as charging them for the cost of expunging juvenile records, public defenders, treatment or probation, mental health evaluations, HIV tests, and even diversion services like arts programs, parenting classes, or group therapy sessions designed to prevent juvenile court involvement. Such charges are levied often with no regard for ability to pay, causing extreme hardship for many families. Failure to pay such court-ordered costs can lead to youth being taken into detention, and once locked up, their costs continue to accrue, with families then being charged by the state for child support or a per-night cost of incarceration. The study finds a direct correlation between fines, fees, and restitution and the rate of recidivism among adolescent offenders, with the rate of recidivism increasing in direct relation to the sum of costs owed. On September 30th in California, Governor Jerry Brown signed a law authorizing a 3-year pilot program that will allow nonviolent felons aged 18 to 21 to access educational and support services in the juvenile justice system instead of serving time in adult county jails. SB 1004 allows 5 counties, including Alameda, Napa, and Santa Clara, to provide this assistance as an alternative to serving time. Those young adult offenders who qualify and don't have a history of crime would serve no more than a year in a juvenile justice facility and have their offence expunged from their record on completion of the program. The law will take effect on January 1, 2017 and run until January 1, 2020. Governor Brown is encouraging the legislature to explore options for young adults such as non-custody-based diversion, which will allow them to access mental health treatment, vocational training, and educational programs that address the needs of young adults or the risks they face, including exposure to older and possibly experienced offenders. Governor Brown also signed into law Assembly Bill 1998, which will start the process of standardizing juvenile justice-related data collection across California's 58 county probation departments. California doesn't have a state Department of Juvenile Justice, making it hard to impose uniform standards across the state, especially when based on current metrics. There is a deficit in the tracking of probation violations, institutional placements, probation length, adult court disposition, recidivism, and long-term health and wellness outcomes for youth. If the government and non-profit organizations are unable to track how involvement with the juvenile justice system impacts youth in the long term, their ability to make informed policy decisions in order to improve the system is severely compromised. On October 11th, the DC Council gave unanimous preliminary approval to legislation that would promote rehabilitation over incarceration for the district's juvenile offenders. In April, Council member Kenyon McDuffie introduced the Comprehensive Youth Justice Amendment Act of 2016, saying that the bill would offer more pathways for troubled youths to become upstanding members of the community. The legislation would prohibit city courts from jailing children before a hearing due to a lack of availability of proper adult supervision, and it would bar the detention of status offenders, juveniles who commit minor offences such as running away from home. The use of solitary confinement for juveniles would be limited, and stringent reporting would be required in cases where it was applied. The bill, which is estimated to cost about $6.7 million over the next 4 years, would prohibit placing people younger than 18 in adult jails and would also bring the district in line with January's U.S. Supreme Court Montgomery v. Louisiana ruling by eliminating juvenile life without parole sentences. The Department of Youth Rehabilitation would be required to conduct an annual analysis of the root causes of youth incarceration in order to track successful and unsuccessful factors in giving youths alternatives to incarceration. Well, that's it for this edition of Juvie's Juvenile Justice News Roundup. If you're enjoying the podcast, please review us on iTunes and follow us on Facebook at Juvie Pod and on Twitter at Juvie Podcast @JuviePodcast. please follow our ongoing story of the case of still-incarcerated juvenile lifer Giovanni Reed and weigh in on whether you think he was wrongfully convicted 25 years ago. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, subscribe so you can be alerted to all our upcoming episodes.
I feel so small. Small. While everything else gets bigger.